What's happening, people? Welcome to this week's episode of the Football Fans Podcast with myself, Jordan Jarrett Bryan. On the pod this week, I'm joined by returning Arsenal fan Basil. What are you saying, man?
I'm good. I can't say my love for football has returned yet.
Oh, wow. But Arteta's army, no? You're still not feeling it?
Not even close.
Last time you were here, you were not having it at all. I thought you might have... Was he appointed by that point? Or was it just before he was appointed?
I think it was just before his appointment.
There was talk of him being the guy.
I'm giving him time, but I'm not convinced whatsoever, if I'm being brutally honest.
Have you seen anything that has made you think, oh...
No, I think
nothing at all.
We're starting to pass a bit more, but that's basics of football. And that's because we played no football under Emery. So I can't even say the style of football is that entertaining. It's just that we're passing and moving a bit more, which is what I expect from any decent manager.
You don't think the work rate has improved? Shape has improved?
Okay, I'll give him that. We look a bit more organised defensively. But it looked that way with Emery in the first few games we had. So I'm not going to get too carried away at what I'm seeing with Arteta so far. I still think he's just the cheapest option that the board could get without having to break the bank to bring in somebody.
But could the cheapest option still potentially be the best option?
It could if the people upstairs knew what they were doing.
Oh, wow.
I mean,
you're not having him at all.
No, I don't mind Arteta, but look at who we brought in January, Cedric and Mari. I'm like, if that is anything to go by, it shows you where Arsenal are heading long term.
Yikes. Fair enough. We've also got Josh, United fan. What are you saying?
I'm good.
Your guys are doing it. Yeah, a couple of wins. Three wins.
I didn't mean United, but...
I'll get straight to it. You know what I mean? Like, first of all, you're doing well, yeah?
Yeah, you're good.
All right. And United now. Is it three wins in three?
I think we're the same, like, you know. Okay. You know, we'll beat...
In and around it.
Chelsea, as usual. And then,
Okay.
The only difference now is that we actually won the next game, which was against a team I expected would drop points, which was Watford. That's the type of game we usually drop points in. Chelsea, easy things.
Oh, wow. G's not here. You're talking big talk. G's not here this week because he's going to watch his team get slapped tonight by Bayern Munich at the bridge. So he's over there. So I would say good luck, but I'd be lying. So we'll see how they get on tonight. Right, let's get into our first one, guys. I want to talk, and we might be joined by Tasha down the line in a little bit. We're going to try and get her on the phone in a bit. So it's the three of us for now. I want to talk, boys, about Leicester. All right. And I wanted to do this show. Well, I was going to do this show a few weeks and deliberately kind of held back asking this question because they were doing really well. And I wanted to do this discussion when they dropped off a little bit, which they kind of have in the last month or so. And the question I want to ask you guys is, why can't Leicester next season be Premier League champions? Because I don't see any reasons why with three or four key additions, that Leicester team can't push Liverpool all the way, if not win it. And I'm not going to put any money on Leicester, but I think there's no real reason as to why they can't win the Premier League next year. Let me start with you, Basil. Are Leicester a team that you think could next year be a Premier League title contender?
I think the recruitment policy is going to be extremely key. If they make maybe three or four key additions to that team, maybe an extra midfielder, maybe a few defenders to improve him, and maybe another attacker. Or another wide man, because I think Gray hasn't been consistent. They still have Albrighton out there. I don't think they really have a winger who really sets the stadium alight at Leicester. I think they rely heavily on their wing-backs to provide that creativity. I think they can. I think the only danger is that everyone else could improve. At the moment, they're there because...
Like who?
Man City could do a bit better. So that's another one.
They could lose players this summer.
But they still got the attraction of money to bring in players. You could see maybe a Chelsea improve. You could see a United improve.
Even you're not convinced, are you? I've got on my list here reasons why I think they could win the league.
One of my reasons why I think they could do it is
I've got a question. Who's the competition? Who's the team that can stop Leicester winning the league next year? And I can only think of Liverpool right now.
Not even City.
Well, I think City could lose players this summer. They could struggle to attract the top players if this ban obviously is upheld. They've got a better team than Leicester, clearly, and a better manager. But I'm just saying, you know.
I think my main reason as to why I don't think Leicester would be is because the mark of teams who win leagues are the teams who are able to beat all the small teams around them and really drop points against the bigger teams. For me, Leicester's still a team where they don't really control games against the lesser teams in the manner that maybe a City have done in the past and the manner in which Liverpool have done this season. And for me, when I see that, I think teams will struggle to win the league if they can't do that. Usually there's teams you expect to beat. That's the mark of champions. When United were winning league titles, they beat all the teams they were expected to beat. Mm. When Arsenal were winning league titles, they beat all the teams they were expected to beat.
Same with Chelsea and
City. They go to these mid-table clubs and these lower league and these lower table clubs, and they're putting them to the sword. I still have my doubts again with Leicester in terms of there isn't that air of invincibility or that air that you're a better team than us when they go up against teams mid-table and below.
Josh, I mean, I'm this is predicated on the fact that they keep.
You talk about next season, yeah?
Yeah.
No chance.
So hang on. Wow.
Well, no chance.
So hang on. This point is predicated on the fact that they'll keep the current players they've got. So
they can keep Chiro, every single player
Madison,
that they have.
They keep Vardy.
They can keep every single player they have. They ain't winning the league next season.
Why not?
Unless another freak happens. You know why I say that? You're talking about what? The last three Premier League titles, including this one that's going to be won, is 100 points. Mm-hmm. Or getting towards 100 points. I'm not seeing Leicester get anywhere near 100 points. I don't care how good they are. They're not getting anywhere near 100 points.
So do you think that's on the basis that you think that next year again will be a 100 point league?
Well,
or close to that at least.
Yeah, it's going to be I think the bar's risen. Like City have risen the bar, Liverpool have risen the bar. I get what you're saying, City might lose a couple players, a couple man, but not going to sell their whole team, are they?
No, but if
they're not going to sell their whole team.
No, but if De Bruyne leaves this season, okay, Silva's gone this
De Bruyne
season,
was out.
And if Sterling goes,
De Bruyne was out most of last season. How many points did they get?
But they still had David
Silva. Yeah, bro, it's not happening.
I'm seeing goals in that team. There's creativity. I think they've got a good defense.
One injury to Kane. I mean to Vardy. They're in trouble.
That was part of the three or four.
Iheanacho is good, yeah, but come on. Let's be serious, isn't it?
That was part of the three or four.
And Vardy's what, like 32, going on 33.
Yeah, but he's not getting worse.
Nah. Bro, like when you get to that age, the cliff is very, very steep.
And secondly, I think defensively, I still worry about them because I think right now the players are playing out their skin. I don't think Johnny Evans is that great. He's a good defender to have in your team. As you said, he's getting older. So I don't know if next season you're going to see the same performance from him. I don't really rate Sayunchu, however you pronounce his name, that highly. I think he's a bit rash. And I think he's quick to always try and... press players sometimes rather than stand back a bit. I see flaws in him. He can improve.
He's quite aggressive, but I think that's how they want to play, isn't it?
All right, let's just do it then. I'm giving you four players this summer. They get another top striker.
Yeah.
Top centre-back.
Which top striker? let's not...
I'm not talking Lewandowski. No, but I'm talking a guy that can get 15, 20 goals next year.
So you said a top striker. All right, so see what I'm saying?
You're mocking the team.
Just look at the fact that other clubs are looking for strikers, yeah?
Yeah.
And people haven't been able to find a striker. You think Leicester's going to pull a top striker out of the hat? Brother, it ain't happening, bro.
Pulled out Kante out the hat.
It's not.
They pulled out Mahrez out the hat.
Okay.
This Seonchu guy, who I agree with you, I'm not a big fan of his, but that's a team that isn't.
How many strikers have they tried to get in since Vardy's been banging?
I mean, quite a few still.
And they've all been average or dead.
Slimani. Didn't they have, Kramaric?
Yeah.
At a time too.
Average or dead.
So what's the best you think Leicester can do next year then?
I think
top four again.
Top four again. I think like people try to look. Remember Tottenham. Remember Spurs. Like
how could we forget?
Yeah.
Do you think that this Leicester team is better than that Spurs team?
No.
But did that Spurs team get anywhere near 100 points? No way, bruv. Get out of it.
I'm not as convinced that 100 points will be necessary. I know the last 2 years that's been
all
the
right.
Bar,
90 points. But... All right, 86 points.
No, not even that.
Spurs team managed 86 points. That was their best. I don't think that Leicester team gets 86.
And where did they finish again?
Second. I don't think that Leicester team gets 86.
I think they could.
Nah, I'm not having it.
86? I think mid-70s.
I'm not having it. Bearing in mind that we played Leicester this season, yeah? And they didn't beat us. They came to Old Trafford and then they couldn't beat us. Mm. And we were rubbish.
Mm, I remember.
I'm not having it. I think Leicester are good. I think they're going to be... Next season, you're going to talk about... I predicted them this season to like come ahead of... Or challenge to come ahead of Chelsea and Man United to get top four, right? I think, again, next season, if they can get another striker in, again, a winger. But when you're talking about a winger, remember they have to, I think, if they're going to get a winger, they need to improve on what they got. So Harvey Barnes.
I think next year it could be a problem. I think next year he could be a problem.
No, but I'm saying if you want to go out and buy someone, you need to improve up what you got. Yeah. If you want to like be challenging for titles, yeah. So you got to get someone better than Harvey Barnes and who plays on the other side. I don't remember now.
I think it's like three behind Vardy, isn't it? It's like really three quite tight behind Vardy.
I think also Vardy's an
Perez, Jose Perez. No, so you can get better players, but like this is like you know, when you get to a certain level, right? When you get to a certain level of player, the price goes up, right? So now you're talking about getting a top winger in. It ain't 50 million anymore. You're talking about going 80 plus.
No, but I think Leicester could get a winger between there's a 40, 50 million pound bracket.
Who?
I don't know who, but there'll be. I don't think they have to. They're not shopping. They're not shopping in the Real Madrid bracket.
I know. But
they can get a 40 million pound winger.
Who?
Leicester spend money.
Good
you know?
Enough.
Leicester do spend money.
Good enough to win the league. That's what I'm saying. I'm talking about someone who's going to come in and be good enough to help them win the title, bruv. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I think they might get lucky. They might find somebody. Mm. Like who was it that someone bought the other day? I think Leipzig bought Olmo. I think he could have been a young sign that could have improved them, could have done something. But even him, that's like 45 million euros. Do you know what I'm saying? So,
I also think Vardy is also an issue. Same issue as Kane is for Tottenham. The issue is that he's always going to play every game. And I think there's games where defenders know how to manage him. Unless you're consistently scoring in more or less every single game and being that key difference, getting regular winners, I think you'll struggle to find strikers who are willing to come to the club and challenge, especially if he's your favourite striker. Because when strikers come to a club, they want to have the opportunity that if I'm given the opportunity, I have an opportunity of staying with staying in the team. Yeah. Whereas when people are looking around, they probably think about, if I'm in the team and he's their number one striker, how many games will I potentially get? And that sometimes stops
you. I don't like that argument, no.
Well, it's happened at Tottenham. That's why Tottenham can't get a striker.
I don't believe so.
I don't buy that argument, even if it's Spurs.
Kane is good, yeah?
But no one wants to drop him.
Kane is good. But if Kane gets injured, if I'm a striker, and I rate myself, and I've seen that Kane has been injured quite a few times, I'm thinking Kane's gonna get injured. There's gonna be a spell when I'm gonna get tanked. If I rate myself, I'm going Spurs.
I give you another example.
Last
season, right, there was a period where Kane was in a bad patch. Yeah. And even then, he wasn't dropped from the team.
But who did they have to replace him?
Llorente didn't do too badly. But at least like you would at least try and switch and give him.
Put it like this: if the second striker was rated, Kane would get rested more.
But that's it, rested.
Kane would get rested more. No, but the second striker was rated,
would he be challenged?
Do you understand?
That's the issue.
They were in for Dybala, weren't they, in the summer? So if that deal had crossed the line,
they would have played him behind Kane. They would have replaced Ali.
No, that's probably true. What I'm trying to say is, like, if look at Aguero and Jesus as an example, yeah. Aguero is the number one striker at City, but see, Jesus plays a lot of games scores a lot of goals. If you're rated, you'll play games. If you're rated, they're not gonna play Kane 60 games a season.
But I think
so. If you rate yourself as a striker, and if you're a player who thinks that you can be elite, there's no reason for you to worry about going to Spurs, because at the end of the day, if you think you're better than Kane, when you play, you show it.
I think City's a different environment than Spurs. I think with City, you can afford to make players unhappy because you know I can replace you next transfer window. Where with Spurs, because they don't have the history of bringing in top quality players, they have to keep players like that happy, because if Kane decides he wants to go, who they're bringing in?
Well, just going back to Leicester final point, my final plea to try and convince you guys they can win the league next year. You're saying they haven't got the goals.
Basically, all the top teams have to be poor.
Yeah.
Just like the last time they won.
And that could happen.
Yeah, but I'm saying...
That could happen. Let's be real.
That's what I said. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen unless another miracle season happens. Because all of the top teams have to be poor.
Well, twice in 6 years is not a miracle then, is it?
No, it is, bruv. Because it hasn't happened yet. If it happens, then I hold my hands up. It happened yet, bruv.
I'm just thinking, you're not convinced about Arteta. You've still got Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Yeah, but
Lampard is a bit meh.
Those teams are not the competition. The real competition for the title
is City and Liverpool.
City and Liverpool.
Right. So I'm saying if they can put themselves in that trio
even
conversation.
Even City are having a poor season by their standards this season, ahead of Leicester. Like, understand that. City are not going to have that season
my
again.
My final point was going to be, all right, you're saying there's not enough goals in that Leicester team to propel them to win enough games, win the title. How about you go the other way? Yeah. How about they buff up the defence?
Their defence is pretty good.
They buff it up even more. So they
I
keep
think
more
their midfield,
they win games
their
by...
Their midfield is probably one of the best in the league.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think they've got a solid defence. Maybe they could upgrade on Chilwell. Right. Yeah. Maybe they could upgrade on Chilwell at left back, but I think their defence is solid. Maybe they could upgrade on Evans, like he said. But yeah. At the end of the day, I think their defence is pretty solid. I think their midfield is quite solid. I think their problems are in the attacking phase of play. I think the wingers are not elite. Obviously, yeah. Harvey Barnes can probably like step up levels, but the wingers are not elite. And without Vardy up there, Ian Acho is decent, but he's not going to win you the title.
No, he's not a Premier League winner. Okay, all right. That's that one there.
Top four match,
right, top four.
Right. I'm not tipping for the title. I'm tipping them if they do some good business this summer and keep their current squad.
Well, like sign up Aubameyang.
Oh wow. I mean, we're laughing, but if we don't get Champions League football, I'll be having a nibble if I was Leicester.
No, if we don't,
I'll be having a nibble.
He's going.
Anyway, all right. Let's. I don't like talking about VAR much on the pod, and we haven't done much this season, to be fair. But I just wanted to kind of briefly talk about VAR and kind of it's had another really bad weekend. First of all, was you in favour of VAR pre-season?
Never.
Before I came in. Okay.
Whoa.
I know there's reasons. The technology, I don't mind. It's more the usage and the parameters as to how it's used. I've had a problem.
Okay.
So I'm not for VAR. Never was for VAR. And I said
so. I'm the only like pro VAR.
You are. And I said at the start of this season, I think it'll be scrapped within two seasons. And it's just getting worse and worse. But what I want to know from you guys is, do you ever feel? Do you think it's possible to get to a place where VAR has minimal complaints? There'll always be something. They'll always have complaints about whatever system is in place. Mm. You're never going to have a flawless system. But can you ever see a situation, Josh, whereby in a year or two in the iron up the kinks, it will just have minimal complaints and the majority of people and football fans and footballers will be on side? Or do you think what we're seeing now is the way it's going to be for the next couple of years?
Whether it's possible and whether it's going to happen are two different things. Mm-hmm. It's definitely possible, but the problem is the people who are in charge of implementing it and running it are idiots. Mm. So it's not going to be. I don't think it's gonna. You're gonna have a situation where people are gonna be happy with it, because even this discussion about going to the referee going to the monitor, where it's done nearly everywhere else, these guys have decided that they're not gonna do it, or they want to dissuade the referees from doing it.
But aren't they doing that now? Haven't they changed their minds and now they can go to the monitor?
They're not encouraged to do it. Okay. So you're allowed to go, but we encourage that you don't. Mm. Well, what's that? It's a nonsense. So the people who are in charge of it are just not very smart. And so I don't think that we'll get to a situation where it has minimal impact. And I think that the situation around VAR is quite interesting, because I feel like there's a campaign to discredit it, if you get what I mean.
Yeah,
right, from before it ever came in, people were moaning about it was going to be a problem. I feel like most pundits, most footballers, most managers were saying things like they're not sure it's going to be good, or they're not sure it's going to happen. Most managers nowadays, the quotes are that they don't like VAR. There's only a couple of managers that are coming out and saying they don't have a problem with it. Right, so I feel like the kind of atmosphere around it is so negative. I don't see it becoming positive, because I think that creates the kind of the media narratives and the like the tone around it. I don't see that changing.
But it was football fans the majority before this year were in favour of it. Most of them were like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And now a lot of them are changing their minds now.
Yeah, so, because the people running it are idiots. And some of it as well, like, it's like, okay, take the handball thing, for instance. Mm. There's nothing wrong with VAR and the handball thing, really. It's the rule.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, that's what VAR really highlights are two things. One is some of the rules that we have which are inadequate, which things would have been missed before. Mm-hmm. But because you see it on camera, you have to apply the letter of the law. Then it becomes a problem, because the law is stupid. That's one thing. The other thing is, is that if you're going to have this VAR thing where you can kind of review something and go back to it, why is there only one person who's the designated referee sitting in the room in Stockdale to make the decision? Why is it one person? And why is it sometimes one person who's only refereed 20 games?
So, what, do you think it should be a team of people?
Yeah, I just think if you have more than one person, then you don't get a situation where what happened in the Chelsea game, where they've basically come out and made a decision, and then within a couple of minutes, someone's come out of from their team and said actually the decision was wrong. If they have a panel, then they will come to the right decision.
Are you talking about the on the weekend between Chelsea and Spurs?
Yeah. How does that happen?
See,
it doesn't make sense.
One of my big issues why I didn't want it in, there's many issues, Basil, but one of my things I didn't want it, because I knew what happened at the Burnley game on the weekend would happen. I knew there'd be a scenario this season whereby something happens in one box and because they can't intervene and stop it,
is that a bad thing? Yeah, do you think what happened in the Burnley game was bad? I don't.
I think it looks messy and it looks crap. And I just think what the hell's going on here?
So the alternative is the goal that shouldn't have stood stands.
You know what? I'm this might sound backwards, but I'm of the mindset that sometimes messed up things happen, and it's a sport, and you can't account for everything in sport that what happens. So sometimes there'll be scenarios where you're like, you know what? Yeah, that was a bit messed up, but boy, trying to scientifically manufacture every single decision of every single game.
This is what, and this
no,
is,
but it is, because it's saying that was technically wrong, so we're going to go back to the wrong and correct it. I'm saying I'd rather just run the game and just, you know what, that was a wrong, but this is sport.
This is sport. You went sick, bro. When you're the owner of Burnley Football Club, and you spent your millions, and you staying in the league.
But okay, so this goes to the crux
goes
of,
down to a rubbish decision by a referee because he can't
this,
do
right,
his job.
So this is the crux of why I personally
Come
think,
on,
Josh, why VAR should never been brought in.
That
the reason why VAR has been brought in to football is because football fans, pundits, ex-players are just immature. Why? If we all accepted that mistakes get made, referees will make mistakes, and it might go against your team, my team.
I think the reverse is true, Jordan.
If people just accepted, let
me tell you why I think the reverse is true, right? Because people, I heard a lot of people arguing about this thing that happened between Burnley and Bournemouth, right? Two goals that Bournemouth scored shouldn't have stood, and they were rightly discredited, right? People are unhappy that happened. So I think the reverse is true. I think the reason why people are upset about VAR in that incident, not all instances, but that particular incident, I think that's immature to be upset that a goal that shouldn't have stood got disallowed. I think that's ridiculous.
But the wider issue,
why are you upset?
But the wider issue, Basil, I have is that I think that if we just accepted that part of sport, there's three elements of sport for me that determine winners. Skill level.
Yep.
Yeah.
Skill level, work rate, and luck.
Yes. Yeah.
Those are the three main things that determine who wins a tennis match, a football game.
Yes.
If we just accept that there's breaks in games that will go your way and go against you, and just that's part of sport, we will accept that sometimes in a game, decisions will go against you that shouldn't go against you.
So why can't you accept
that hurts?
Why can't you accept that when VAR decision happens,
because
it goes against you?
Because I think
that decision goes against you. It's the same thing.
No, because I think we're losing too. I think we're losing... the celebration, the spontaneity, the luck factor that goes on both sides for both teams, for everybody.
You still have it though.
No, I don't think you do though.
Let me tell you why you still have it, right? And it's all that's happened is that all of that kind of drama is shifted to something else. For instance, Giroud's goal against United.
Yeah.
Right? Giroud scored, Chelsea fans celebrated.
Yeah.
They thought they got back into the game. So there's the kind of like drama and like whatever.
But I don't
then,
like that drama.
Hold on, wait. So a goal got scored and you're saying, oh, it stops the celebration. It doesn't, because there was a celebration and people got hyped. Then VAR thing comes up. Oh, no. Then the United fans are celebrating because the goal gets disallowed.
But that's not sport.
Yeah, that's not sport.
It's not sport. It's a byproduct of
what exactly
of
is
just
it?
Confusion. Fans just confused.
It's not.
That's not sport for me.
It's not really.
So here's the thing. For me, one of the issues that they rushed in VAR, because as England do, they didn't want to fall behind other countries because they
even though they were behind other countries,
they feel like we have to be back on top. Mm-hmm. For me, the way it should have been done, it should have been used in the background, not implemented, but yeah. used in the background and trialed. And then after every match, they analyze key points.
What do you mean by background? Sorry.
So basically, VAR is being used in matches, but not actually being it's being used in the matches, but not live. So they can't go to VAR. They're analysing everything in the background so that after matches, they can talk about talking points, analyse that, maybe communicate that
kind
with
of secretly?
Yeah, secretly.
Okay, okay.
Communicate what they saw with managers and key stakeholders and start to decide how VAR should be used correctly. So based upon the results that they get via each match. And then after, when the season's ended, have mm-hmm. that discussion. By then, they have a definitive idea as to how VAR is used.
Yeah.
England just rushed it in with no preparation as to how to use it. Even the parameters as to how it's used is all wrong. Like in the World Cup, it was used for like a mistaken identity, mm-hmm. Penalties, mm-hmm. offside, and I think there was one more. That was the parameters as to how VAR was used. In England, I'm not sure how it is in other countries, we've extended it to all these other factors.
It feels like they're making it up as they go.
They're making it up as it's going.
It does. Mm.
Yeah.
But your biggest issue with VAR is that it's being monitored and run by referees. The reason why it was brought in is because of the incompetencies of referees. But those same referees who have made all those bad decisions which brought VAR are the same ones upstairs. And they're still making the bad decisions even though their technology is there.
But this is my problem because VAR, you're not gonna get. You're always gonna get bad decisions.
You shouldn't because
no.
When you look at the level of the decisions, like two red cards within the space of a week not given, like common sense, even the layman could tell you that they were blatant red cards. And look how long it even took for them to actually review those decisions. I think you need an independent.
Which red cards?
Oh, you're talking about Matic.
Maguire and then Lo Celso, I think was. For me, I think you need an independent body aside from referees.
This is the problem.
I'm with Josh a little bit on where I think he's going to go.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced that one on the weekend was a red card.
Which one?
The
Chelsea?
The Chelsea one.
It was a red deal.
For me, it's not obvious.
Oh
my God.
It is a red.
If it was a red, I'd be like, okay, cool. But it wasn't like
that. That was worse than Maguire's. That was worse than what Aubameyang got sent off for.
I'm not sure, but that's my issue with it. I think the subjectivity of it is an issue for me.
Yeah.
Here's what I would say, and this is Basil. What Basil just said, the first part of what you said, Basil, I totally agree with.
Yeah.
They rushed it. They should have done some analysis. They should have spoken to the managers and so everybody knew what was going to happen, right? They should have done all of that, but they didn't because this is what happens, right? Yeah. But this whole thing about it needs to be some independent body, like, I'm telling you, they're going to get things wrong as well. So the whole thing that people need to understand is that VAR doesn't mean that every single decision is going to be right.
No,
the whole point of
I didn't
it,
expect that either.
And this is the problem I have with people that argue about it, because they've got technology, so it should be perfect. No, but humans are making decisions.
It will never be
so.
Bad.
Therefore, it's never going to get everything right. The whole point is that it should get less things wrong than if you didn't have it. But what happens? What I've started to notice is that getting less things wrong than if you didn't have it is just as you alluded to with Burnley, Bournemouth. People don't like that either.
No, but Josh, I agree with you in that sense that the tight calls, it can swing either way.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's the fact that we've seen so many obvious mistakes.
I think, I agree.
There was one, Arsenal played, which team was it? I think they came back from maybe 2-0 down and it was 3-2 and Socrates had his hand up.
Yeah.
Villa. Oh, that was
a blatant penalty.
Did the ref give it?
No, it wasn't given.
No, forget VAR. Did the ref give it?
No, it didn't. No, but what?
So
I'm saying,
what's the difference?
No, but one thing is that they had a VAR review,
and
someone concluded it wasn't a penalty.
Yeah. So that's my problem is that one person. Like, if you have the more people look at it, But what I'm trying to say is, what's the difference? Because at the end of the day, the ref didn't give it anyway. So the result is the same.
No, and I agree.
Whether you had VAR or not, the goal was given.
And that's what I'm saying.
No, but hang on. But if in that incident, sorry Basil, that he's just mentioned then, I think Basil was saying if the VAR was applied and said, look, we've seen something, stop the game and go to the screen and review it, there's a higher chance the referee being,
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm disagreeing with the whole thing that where people are saying that VAR is a bad thing. It's what not. I'm trying to say, when people use those kind of examples, then what's your alternative? At the end of the day, there's not the goals given anyway, regardless.
No. So with that one, what I'm trying to say is that, and another thing is that, that also, it doesn't improve the referees' performances, which is why we still have bad referees.
You think it rewards bad behaviour?
I think because it does.
No, it does, you know, because they're chicken out of making decisions.
Yeah, they're chicken out of making decisions. And then secondly, when you have those same referees making bad decisions in the VAR studios. So for me, I was like, so where is the encouragement for these referees to improve on their performances?
Yeah, but this is my thing, and this is the reason why I get irritated by this conversation, because actually the problem's not VAR, it's
the referees that are the problems.
Right? The problem is the referees. The referees don't want to be accountable, right? This is why the person on VAR can't really override the ref. Like, they have to tell the ref and the ref whatever. The ref doesn't want to go to the monitor because he doesn't want to back down the decision he's already made, right? So the system of VAR, there's nothing wrong with it. Everything that's wrong with it is implementation and the humans that are controlling it.
Simple as. You watch other leagues. In Germany, they're in year two or year three of this?
Yeah, two, I think.
Year two. Yes, year and two. Italy, they're in year two as well, right?
Yeah.
And I know that in Italy, for sure, maybe Germany as well, they hated it. I think in Holland as well, they weren't initially. Have they ironed out kinks there? Or A, has it got better? And B, has the perception amongst the clubs and fans been like, actually, okay, yeah,
I can give you...
Go on.
So it's definitely got better. Like I said, the difference between those countries and this country is that they're not making the blatant errors that they're making in this country.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a tight decisions, which most people accept are correct. So probably them having it a year earlier has helped them. So you can tell, like, with the tight calls, there doesn't seem to be much issue with the usage of VAR, especially in Germany, from when I've seen it. Everyone seems to be on board, and they seem to be getting most decisions correct. They seem to know how to use it correctly. And they're more encouraged to go and view the monitors than in this country, where I don't understand why they don't.
What are the reasons why we think they are reluctant to not use the monitors?
I've just said.
But they've been encouraged not to.
All right, so
I think it's arrogance.
Nah, do you know what I think it is? Yeah, and I think this might go down to the Chelsea, Spurs thing as well. I think that one of the main concerns about VAR was time. When it first came, it takes too long to make a decision. I think they've made a conscious effort to start making decisions quickly, right? And the problem with that is because you increase human error, especially if it's only one person making a decision, you're increasing the likelihood for there to be human error, because he's feeling the pressure, like, I need to make a decision quickly, I can't take too long,
and it's just me,
so it's just me, so I'm not even, probably he ain't looked at it properly, because how then 2 minutes later or 10 minutes later, whatever it was, they've now came out and said it should have been a red.
That was bad.
So that,
I mean, at least until the game's finished, exactly. The weekend games are finished,
so
that tells me that they're rushing it.
So I think going to the monitor is going to take... They think it's going to take time. The second thing about going to the monitor is I seriously think that referees in this country, once they've made a decision, do not want to reverse it. I don't think the refs want to go to the monitor, personally.
Why?
I agree.
I
think it makes them look bad, because ultimately...
Makes them look worse if they're making decisions that after the game we can all see were clearly wrong.
I think because they received so much abuse about their performances over the last few years... If they're now shown to, well, I've made another error and I have to go to the monitor to reverse it, I think people lose confidence in them. And I think they're already worried about that, which is why I think they're leaving the decision up to someone who cannot be seen. So at least they can, as Joshua said, pass the buck, no accountability.
So just final point. So as a football fan, would you have more faith in a referee who... didn't go to the monitor and made decisions? He was assertive. He was like, no, I know what I'm doing, I'm sure. But of the five, three were wrong. Or would you have more confidence in a referee that out of five decisions, three were wrong, you saw in hindsight? So you're at home watching and you can see out of the which referee do you have more confidence in?
The one that goes to the monitor.
It depends. I don't know if I have confidence either. I think the biggest thing is that these referees need to not be scared of overruling the on-pitch referees' decisions. I think at the beginning, there was that fear about... They utilised this, clear and obvious rule too much, so that they didn't have to overrule referees.
Here's a simple thing, right? because I've seen that, like, the on watching the game sometimes there's a screen, there's yeah. like three of them in the room, innit? Only one of them doing something, but there's three in the room for what? What are they doing? Anyway,
Some have got to bring the cheese in, you know, the biscuits, you know.
In it. There's three of them watching the game, right? You do your VAR, so forget the ref. Like, we're watching the game. We think the ref made a bad decision.
Yeah.
Three of us are going to watch it. Three of us are going to put our decision into the system. Mm. We're not going to confer. We're just going to put our decision in the system. If we all put the same thing in, the ref gets told he's made a mistake.
So if two out of the three...
No, if all three of them override the ref, the ref gets told he's made a mistake.
But what if two out of the three...
Then the referee
gets on with it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or would you prefer that...
If it's unanimous... Then you've got three against one.
Then basically you're saying it's clear and obvious. Because that's what they're trying to say, clear and obvious. Mm. If all three of them say the ref made a mistake... The ref don't have a choice. He needs to go and reverse that decision. Forget the monitor.
How does it work in the NFL?
I like that. What about if it's two out of three? Would you then say, I think you should go to the monitor that decision?
They can do all of that. But the problem with all of that stuff now is people are going to start moaning. Oh, it's two out of three. Just don't say anything, can it? nothing happened. That's what I'm trying to say. The ref doesn't hear anything until three of them agree. Mm. So when we're watching the game...
We don't know.
Three of them have now decided. Bang, it comes up. VAR. If the ref wants to go and look at the screen to see what he done wrong, good. That's good for him. But it comes up, decision reversed.
I kind of like that idea. Obviously, it can be tweaked a bit.
It was interesting being at the Emirates on the weekend. It was my first experience of seeing VAR on the screen.
Yeah.
And what was the decision? There was a decision... I think it was the first goal, the Calvert-Lewin goal.
Yeah, for high foot.
Yeah. They sent it to review. And it just like it was just weird, like waiting and watching. I got to see for the first time in a long time, like how
it happened.
The fan experience, you know what I mean? Waiting and not knowing, but you kind of do know. It was mad. Anyway, how does it work in the NFL? Just briefly, do they overrule the ref?
No, they speak to him.
Confirm, or do they tell him that's a mistake? Change it.
I can't remember NFL. I know in rugby they tell him, and he changes it based upon what information.
They do.
I think it's the same.
Okay. All right.
Even they make mistakes. So.
And in that one, I'm not sure about the fans, but I know people watching on TV, you can hear the conversation.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because I'm doing Six Nations.
Yeah, I don't think you should do that in football. Football fans are just, they're not saying.
Let's move. Brief Fantasy Football League update. We've got a new leader. Coach Gerald Lamy has moved up to first with a game week of 58 points. He's replaced Singing for Ingram. He's been top for most of the season. He's now second with a game week of 51 points. I had a game week of 48 points, and I'm now down to ninth. Josh, you're still behind me, but you did move up to 11th with 61 points. Are you in our league, Basil?
Yeah.
I forgot about you. I had
a bad 2 weeks.
What was your game week?
I didn't even check.
Okay, let's move on. Let's move on. Right. All right, I want to try and squeeze in two more quick ones. I want to talk to you guys about. First one, as a professional in the game, do you feel you just have to hold your lip regardless of whatever stick you get? And there's two examples I've kind of got here. We kind of touched on it a few weeks ago. Shaka was one, and the whole when he was getting abused and, you know, him biting back and all that scenario. But the more recent one was the one at Bournemouth where Dan Gosling... And the referee. So Dan Gosling says, John Mosh, he says that he showed him zero respect and was a disgrace for making sarcastic comments about their league position.
Wait, hold on. The ref was doing that.
Yeah.
See what I mean about the refs?
No, but the ref was provoked.
Let me land. So now, the comments that he made, especially to Mr. Quote, the comments that he made, especially to me and one other player talking about the relegation zone, in quotes, you're still in the relegation zone, you're having one, your team's having one, this and that, and this is very, very disrespectful. That was his response to the referee. Gosling confirmed the comments were made during the game before adding, I think we should really come out, he should come out and apologise because he was a disgrace. So basically what happened was he didn't get a decision that he felt should have gone his way.
Yeah.
He was giving the referee lip, abusing the referee, and the referee just thought, boy, mate, you ain't going down because of my performance today. You're going down because your team is dead.
Yeah, I know.
Fix up. And today you're playing really bad. So now the FA aren't going to act on this because I don't really know who they should really... What do they do?
Mm-hmm.
But the bigger thing I want to ask you, start with you, Basil, is if you're a player, mm-hmm. do you just have to just accept that stuff's going to come your way? So this is an example because you've got two professionals as opposed to fan and player. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that in a minute. But do you just feel that as a player, if you're going to chuck it and abuse referees, referees are entitled to give a little bit back? Or as a referee, is it a thing of whatever abuse you get, you've just got to suck it up and take it?
I think it's unprofessional for the referee to do that. But at the same time, I don't disagree with what he's done.
That's a fence. That's a fence sitting job. someone's at fault here. Either you're saying the referee.
What did he say to the ref? What did he say?
He was just giving him a stick. Just like, you know, that was that. You should, I should have had a foul there. You're having a stinker. You know,
the ref was right to do what he did. I'm sorry. There's only so much abuse and lip you can get from a player, and then you have to look at the situation and say, you know what, I'm not here because of this. I mean, if you upped your performance, maybe your team will be in a better position. And maybe these decisions...
But can he say that? Can he say that on the pitch to the player?
Professionally, he shouldn't say it, but I don't mind.
Like, you don't mind?
I'm up for
I think it's shocking.
It's shocking, but...
I know it happens, because I know that refs do it. Like, obviously, I don't play professional football, but I play football. Refs do it, innit?
I understand,
but... I think it's really unprofessional. And one of the things that tends to happen is that you get this kind of idea that sometimes a ref can be biased. The minute the ref starts doing that, in my head, if the ref's giving my team stick, I'm thinking he don't like my team. So when the decision goes against me, if it's a tight decision, I'm thinking he's being biased. This is why I don't think he should open his mouth. End of the day, if he's getting disrespected by the player, pull out your yellow card. What's it like if the player's giving you foul and abusive language, you discipline the player by pointing at you, what are you giving stick for? What's it for? In general, I don't think that players should just hold any stick. So it goes too far.
So going back to the Shaka thing, you think if the fans are abusing a player, let's just say any player, abusing the player,
if it's between two, professionals, there's a protocol. If the player abuses the ref, right? Mm. Then the ref can take action. Either he can give a yellow card. If it's really abusive, you send him off. Simple. Be professional, right? If you're a player, the ref's giving you the stick. Obviously, report it to the FA or whatever. Mm. But if it's the fans are not professionals, so you can't really. You know what I'm saying?
But as a professional football player, you think that that players are entitled to give something back if they've been abused all game
by a fan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not?
I think so. It just depends on whether you can take it.
Because there's a clue in the title there. You're a professional football player.
Yeah. So I'm a professional at work. I'm a professional at work. Do you think that somebody could just come to my workplace and start chatting rubbish? Are you alright? Obviously, if the player goes too far, hold the consequences. That's why I wasn't like Xhaka losing the captaincy straight. Like, obviously, if you're a captain, you're in a position of responsibility. So if you do something that goes against that, you lose that privilege. That's cool. But if you're ever and you go into the stands, then obviously you take the consequences of that. Mm. But just giving stick back to fans who chat all sorts of rubbish, I've been to games. I've heard some of the stuff that fans say.
Is there a level of abuse that is tipping point? So obviously, if you're being racially or you're being called homophobic things, that aside. But if you're just being for 90 minutes, you're rubbish. You're shit.
Hold it.
You're a fat so and so.
You know
why
what?
Are you playing football?
You know what?
And you gotta just hold that as a professional.
Yeah,
you gotta hold it
as a professional. If you are shit,
the Prime Minister can't. If I'm abusing the Prime Minister in a press conference, he can't just come for me.
No, but listen, he's
the Prime Minister.
Listen, no, but is that true? Trump, what happened? Does he not come for people? Is he holding the consequences? You know what I'm saying? The world's changed. Listen, if you're shit as a player, if you're shit as a player and fans are saying you're shit,
there's credence to it.
At the end of the day, if it's me, if I'm playing shit and I'm getting told by a fan I'm shit, I'll look at myself. Do you understand? But if I'm playing a game and the fan's chatting nonsense, that's a different story. Holding criticism as a player, I think if you're a top player and you have standards for yourself, you will hold the criticism. Because most top players know when they're having a bad performance. Mm. Most of them know when their level's below where it should be, right? The ones that can't take it, you ain't got the heart for this game. Like, just understand that. So go and hold yourself in the regular relegation team. You're not playing for the top teams, innit? Because if you're playing for the top teams, when your level's low, your players are going to give it to you, fans are going to give it to you, and that should... You're going to go and train or you're going to go and fix up.
And come back better.
But if fans are just giving you stick because they don't like you as an opposition fan, again, you hold that again. But there's levels. You might be able to say, oh, we don't like you, or sing a chant about you, but don't bring up my family. Don't get personal, because then I'll give it to you back.
All right. Just very brief one on this one, Basil. I might do this, develop this a bit more next week. But Liverpool obviously killing it, won the title. But they've matched Man United's points total from their treble winning season already.
There we go.
Is it? And the next one's going to be they've also matched Arsenal's win record from the Invincible season. So, I'm not just thinking about United.
No, I'm not. I was just talking about United thing.
Okay,
I know where we're going.
Okay. Is it possible, in your opinion, to be classed a great team within one season?
Yes, you can. Like, if Liverpool finish this season unbeaten, for me, I would say they're probably the best team in English history, in my opinion. Because you have to look... No, you have to look at...
Obviously,
as a United fan. No, but...
Nah, forget
without,
United.
Without any bias. Forget about United. The reason why I'm saying is that to win the amount of games they've won, the opponents they're playing for me is much more difficult than when Arsenal and United...
Is it?
Much...
I disagree.
100%. United only has to do with Arsenal.
Did you watch the game yesterday? United. And you think that's harder?
It doesn't matter. They've learned.
You watched that, bro. Did you see the goal that West Ham conceded for the equaliser?
But here's the thing. They've learned how to be ruthless kill off teams without even playing well. For me, and look at the level of competition in the league and the amount of teams who are capable of beating Liverpool, and they haven't done it so far.
But wasn't you saying earlier on that it's a poor league?
It is.
You can't say it's a poor league.
No. It's a poor league because the teams are inconsistent. But the teams are definitely stronger than when Arsenal United...
Bro,
and
listen.
Past Liverpool teams have won their titles.
Nah, I don't know about that,
United and Arsenal, for instance, they only had to do with each other in the league. They didn't really have to worry about many other teams in the league. When you look at the teams from second to 10th, they're all difficult teams to go away and beat.
Currently.
And the fact that if Liverpool go this season unbeaten...
I think there's so many poor teams in this league.
But just going back to the central question, do you think it's possible to be classed as a great team in what just after one season?
No.
Yes.
So if Liverpool got unbeaten, points record, wins record, and win the title, obviously, you don't think that warrants them being in the conversation with one of the greatest teams of all time?
Do you want me to, like, we've had this conversation about the Invincibles. I've always said to you, I don't think they were a great team. And I've given you my reasons. Because that team, like, for me, like, obviously you can... I don't like when people try to, like, box things into one season. And the thing about this Liverpool argument is that it's not just one season. Because last season they were fantastic. And they won the Champions League last season. And they went to the Champions League final the season before that. So this team is a great team. I'm not going to say they're the greatest, but this is a great team. But I don't think one season can define you as a great team. Because the greatest teams who have played in the Premier League did it over two or three seasons. They retain titles.
Yeah, I'm with that, but that's like saying, what do you mean, no competition? That's like saying,
where's the competition this season? City have fallen off a cliff.
The teams are more difficult.
What's commonly known or agreed as the greatest hip hop album of all time? Just give me some examples.
Like Nas, Illmatic.
Right, there you go. Okay. If Nas only wrote that one album, does that make him less of a great artist?
Yes.
Why?
Yes.
If that's the greatest album of all time, but it's only one album.
No, I agree with Justin.
Yes.
That
there's lots of artists. Yeah, I'm not gonna name. There's lots of artists that have come out and done one hit song or one album
and done nothing else. Not one hit song, one album.
No, we agree that album.
We're saying that album will go down as one of the greatest albums of all time.
Yes, yeah.
So that was his only album.
Because if everything else
they did was trash.
Yeah.
Then you rate them against the other artists who were consistent.
Yeah.
This is what happens when we start talking about the greatest rappers.
But you can be consistent and put out good albums, but they can still not match that one album from My Man down the road.
Yeah, I agree. But
yeah, so?
So I can put out 5 okay albums. You can put out 1 great album. No, well, but am I better than you? Because I've been consistent.
But that's not the conversation, because then we're saying that there's other artists who have brought out 2 or 3 or 5 great albums.
But the point
so
I'm
it's
making
about
is...
who you're comparing yourself to. And we can't say that there haven't been Premier League teams who have done it for two or three seasons. Jose Mourinho's Chelsea have done it.
I agree with that, but what I'm saying is it possible if you take isolated seasons out, so United's best ever Premier League season, Liverpool's best ever season, Arsenal's, are Liverpool on par with Chelsea's greatest season?
Could,
Liverpool, United's best ever season.
Because even with Jordan's point, they say the same about Lauryn Hill. She made one album, but they class as like one of the greatest
of all time
based on one album. So if you're going to use that example,
I don't think they class her just off the album.
Oh, no, they do. They do.
I don't think they class her of that. But we're going left.
My point is that can you be classed as great with just one bit of work? Can one bit of work still have you in the conversation one of the greatest of all time?
No, because the Invincibles were not great.
Liverpool
is a different conversation because we're talking about three seasons now. They went to the Champions League final.
They won
the Champions League. They're doing it again. This is a great team.
But in terms of league,
if you talk about like clubs and then what they've done as a body of work,
yeah,
I'm with you. United's body of work, you can't really suppress the Premier League era.
I think
and they've won three in a row, you can't top that.
The way I look at it, yeah, is that we're comparing teams, right? And the team usually is together for more than a season. The nucleus of a team is you. So when
I'm with you,
this is why when people start comparing teams and say this team was better than that team,
I can't say.
Take one season from that team and compare it from what I look at the body of work of the teams. This is the way I think about it. So when someone says, "Is this Liverpool team or that Arsenal team, or whatever?"
What I'm trying to get to is,
you know what I'm saying?
Is it possible to do so much madness within one season that the argument of longevity is equalized?
No.
So if Liverpool scored 200 goals this season, didn't concede one goal, won every single game,
and then the next season
every single record,
and they did rubbish. No, but I'm saying
if they did that madness in one season,
yeah,
does that not then put them in the conversation of the greatest team of all time?
Well, if they
probably.
So it's possible then.
No,
listen, if they finish the season unbeaten,
they're not going to do that.
I'm stretching a point to make a point.
It's a better team than any of the last point.
I don't mind that conversation. You saying that? That's your opinion. But what the no, because I don't necessarily think this season's better than Jose Mourinho's season where he can only conceded 15 goals. Right. So. Forget, it's not a Man United thing.
Yeah.
This is just like, we're just talking about great teams. And I think obviously this Liverpool team is in the conversation to being a great team, maybe one of the greatest. Like, they're in the conversation.
But you think based off of 3 years.
But it's not based off one season. And I would never, it's the same way when a striker comes out and he bangs 30 goals in one season. And then people start saying, oh, he's world class. We have the same conversation. I'd be like, but what's he doing next season? What did he do last season?
I agree.
Like, no, world class for what?
Okay, that's so what in that one season he scored 50 goals.
No. Yeah, so?
No.
And didn't match that ever.
Do you remember
again?
When Kevin Phillips scored, what was it? 30 goals.
Do you remember the middle?
But 30 goals is not phenomenal.
No, but that was then. 30 goals was phenomenal then.
Henry was getting 30. Shearer was getting 30. Cole was getting 25, 30.
30 was phenomenal then, bruv. Not a lot of strikers got 30 goals then.
Yeah, I don't know about phenomenal. It was great, but it wasn't phenomenal. Like, whoa, he got 30 goals?
The two strikers you mentioned, do you know what type of strikers they were? They were phenomenal strikers, bro.
Yeah, but they were. But
as
30 goals in one season still wasn't ever like unheard of.
Yeah, but it was a great season.
It was not many strikers. We're talking about times when a top striker got 18. You know what I'm saying? 30 goals was mad, bro. That's mad.
We'll develop this. Basil and Josh, check on this week's pod. Don't forget to subscribe to us. We're across all the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Follow us, subscribe to us on iTunes and Spotify as well. Till next week. Peace.